Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. This is John Williams. We appreciate you joining us. Jason Turner is the Chief Investment Strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management. The website's wintrustwealth.com. Hi, Jason. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, John.
There's a couple of recurring topics these days. Inflation is one of them. And when you drill down to the specifics, I think people are kind of curious about what the experience is that they're having. How does it relate? And is it going to get even worse? What specific items are people seeing the effects of inflation on right now?
I think in the most recent inflation report for October, which was a surprising increase, even though our consensus expectations were for a significant increase to begin with, we've certainly seen energy move the farthest and the fastest. Price of gas is up 6.1% just in the last month, 50% in the last year. That's probably where people are feeling it first the most. But if you pay attention to your grocery bill, you're also feeling it there. Price of food is up significantly as well.
Is it beef? I think I've heard that beef is pretty high relative to where it was, you know, a month ago or a year ago. Is that leading the charge? Are there specific categories?
Yeah, beef is leading the charge. But across all of the food group indices that get factored into CPI, they're all up. Beef is up a little over 3% in the last month. Poultry, fish, and eggs are all rising sharply as well, between 1.5% and 2.25% just in the last month in all of those commodities.
Is it, you know, we were a little more careful, I think, about comparing things earlier in the pandemic to same day a year ago. And we seem to have stopped doing that. But if this is November, then we're comparing November of 2021 to November of 2020 when things were largely shut down. I wonder if this inflation, if it's compared to the same time a year ago, is a true reflection on where the prices should be.
That's an astute observation, John. Something I've been talking a lot about with our clients is looking at inflation not in the 12-month rolling period that gets reported in our headline CPI number, but expanding that window out to 2 or 3 years and seeing where prices are really changing. For example, the price of used cars is up significantly over the last 2 or 3 years. That's pretty consistent. Energy is now up over the last 2 or 3 years. You have to expand that window out to about 10 years before you see energy looking like it's on more of a normal course of price increases. But, of course, that's volatile. Those things that people are feeling more directly and more longer term in their day-to-day lives, price of vehicles, price of shelter, and we're starting to see those home price increases we saw last year and early this year start to impact what they call owner's equivalent rent, which is what's factored into CPI.
Cars, homes, and energy, though. Well, let's say cars and homes. I think most of us can imagine the way that gets figured out. Chips become available, cars become produced, prices go down because supply goes up. We're already seeing something like that in houses. So I kind of see our way out of that. I'm not sure about shoes and clothes and groceries, though. Are those up substantially, say, from 2 years ago, too? Do we see the inflation curve there as well?
We do. We do see some level of inflation a little bit above where our target would be. The Fed's target is 2%. We're certainly seeing inflation over the last 2 years in some of those categories in the, say, 3 to 5% range on an annualized basis. And that's higher than we would normally see in terms of a target. And that, of course, we all feel in our wallets and pocketbooks.
Yeah. So what do we do? Do you guys have smart advice on where to put my money to get around all of this?
Well, some of the things that we look at in terms of these impacts of inflation is how does that change the long-term calculus for a long-term investor? And to be quite honest, I think over a gradual period, and it's going to last longer than any of us feel comfortable with, we're going to return to a regime of more normalized levels of inflation and economic growth. The trick is to weather that storm in the short term. So our advice to clients right now is to understand your long-term financial plan, stick to that long-term financial plan, but also there's some things you can do in the short term like Treasury Inflation Protected Securities and real estate that react a little bit better in inflationary environments, and those are certainly areas for more short-term focus that we're looking at.
I wish I'd started that question sooner. I'm out of time today, but maybe folks will reach out to Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management at wintrustwealth.com. And we'll talk more about that next time. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Thanks for having me, John.
Ian Schur joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, editor-at-large at CNET. Hi, Ian.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Tim Cook's company, Apple, will not accept cryptocurrency as payment, but he owns cryptocurrency, is a story you wrote.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. So he was doing an interview with the New York Times, and typically he doesn't say much of anything because, you know, he's Apple CEO. All he has to do is really talk about how great his iPhones are, and we at CNET reviewed them pretty well, so he gets the pass on that.
Yeah.
But they asked him about Bitcoin, and he said that he does own cryptocurrencies. It's worth noting he's worth $1.4 billion with a B, so he can afford to lose a little bit in case the market goes crazy. But he said he doesn't want Apple to get into it too much right now. He said that unlike other companies that have started buying crypto as part of their hedging strategies and their money management, he's not going to do that with Apple's cash pile. And he also doesn't plan to start accepting crypto to pay for stuff like Tesla and some other places have allowed as well.
I wonder how the market would have reacted if he said, yeah, starting with the next model, we'll take payment with crypto.
I mean, it's interesting. The market right now is at or near all-time highs, right? It was at all-time highs yesterday, and now it's backed off a bit. But it's interesting to see how essentially everyone's waiting for what is the next big company that's going to accept crypto or be a part of it. And, you know, look, one thing we've written about on CNET many times is that this whole crypto market is very much reliant on hype. Right, it's really right now. Tons of it is just focused on who is talking about what when, and that is a recipe for a lot of instability, which is what we've seen.
Mm. Talk to me about Apple and this feature that will warn kids about nude images.
Yeah, so this is something that we heard about earlier this summer. Essentially, what Apple's doing is that it wants to help protect kids a little better. And so they built a number of technologies, including something they're actually testing now. So if you're on Apple's test service, you're actually probably using it or have the ability to. And what it is that if you have an account that's marked as a kid, right, and in Apple's iCloud, you can say what's a kid, what's an adult. What will happen is that if you try to send or you are receiving an image that the phone determines to have nudity in it, and the phone actually does computer programming and stuff on itself to figure this out. It's not some program somewhere else. It'll then warn you. It'll make the image blurry and say, hey, did you know that this image might have nudity in it? And then ask you whether or not you're comfortable seeing it. And if you want help, Apple will also try to direct you toward a place that could either help you in terms of being an organization that could help you in case of abuse, or also you could contact a person that you trust, like a parent or a family member.
By the way, speaking of imagery and Apple products in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, there was a moment where they were not clear on whether or not when you use the pinch and expand or contract function on your Apple devices, does that change the image somehow? Does it add information? I don't want
right.
to get into this much, but what's your overall wisdom for us on that topic?
It's actually interesting. This has been a debate in the photography world for a long time. What constitutes a photo? And by the way, this debate has existed ever since you could manipulate a photo by blowing it up. And so I think what's tough here is that, you know, I'm not going to say one way about whether the judge is right or wrong, but I will note that Apple has a what's called an image signal processor, which is a computer program running in the background and the chip that actually takes a ton of photos all the time whenever you take a photo and then tries to find the best light and dark parts to make it look the best it can. And that's not just when you pinch and zoom. That's every time you take a photo. So if we're going to debate whether pitch and zoom is changing the photo, I think we should also apply those same questions to the photo itself, at which point, what's a photo, right? And that's where the conversation kind of goes off a cliff.
And I guess it's for a judge to decide if it's admissible as evidence when you do that, because while I imagine we all are just doing that to make things look clear, to look more closely, we're not actually adding objects. But maybe that very manipulation is the equivalent of it. It somehow changes the view so that, boy, this is a reach for me. I wasn't talking like this earlier. I think it's absurd that they didn't want them to do this. But I don't know, Ian, is there something to that? Maybe we should be cautious about believing what we see on our devices that way?
Well, I think that, again, this is part of, this is, you have to remember that part of the strategy for any good defense is to poke holes in the prosecution's argument. And I think that if they're going to start talking about what is a photo and what happens when you zoom in, then maybe they should have a technology expert up on the stand talking about how the apps actually work.
Yeah.
From what I understand, none of that conversation has happened. Again, I'm not making a judgment here, but I think that it's a very weird thing to have the judge deciding on this without actually consulting the people who wrote the apps and know how they work.
I know, so now we got to go there. That's what he told the prosecution yesterday. Well, then get somebody up there to affirm for us that this is what we think it is. Meanwhile, yeah. Amazon has 12-pound turkeys for $12 right now. Not an article I thought I would see on your website.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things we try to help people out with, especially around the holidays, is shopping, right, and finding good stuff and worthwhile things. And we, at CNET, we have a gift guide, which we have live on the site if you need help finding stuff. But also, one of the things we found out was that Amazon is selling these turkeys, which are, by the way, vegetarian-fed, they are cruelty-free, all these really kind of typically more expensive things through Whole Foods, and they're selling them for about $1 a pound. Now, you do have to pay $10 for delivery, so it's not exactly the cheapest it's going to be, but it is something that typically costs a lot more for a higher-quality bird, and you're able to get it through Amazon.
YouTube is shifting to a shopping destination. What's going on here?
It's really interesting. You know, one of the things that's been going on, particularly in China, is that there's been a lot more integration between shopping and the social media world. And it's become a huge business. I mean, we're talking about $352 billion estimated this year in China through these kind of fusion of social media and e-commerce. So what YouTube is doing is that they're going to start doing, you may have noticed some of their videos, there's already like a link to buy stuff that's mentioned in the video, in the videos. They're going to start doing more of that. But also, in the coming days, you're going to start seeing a Shopathon, almost like QVC. But it'll be on YouTube using some of their biggest influencers, like Mr. Beast and whatnot, to hawk goods. Now, it'll mostly be tech stuff and beauty products, two types of industries that do very well on YouTube. But it'll be very interesting to see how this goes, right? Because it's kind of a different thing for YouTube, and also something that includes these influencers who the survey data shows people trust these influencers more than they trust sports stars or celebrities.
Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET. Always fun. Thanks for your help today, Ian.
Thanks for having me.
I'm just looking at a number here that I wanted to make sure I saw correctly. Jack Ablin wrote a piece, and he said, with $2 trillion in market value and 200 million users, digital currency is gaining financial market legitimacy. The $2 trillion number is the one that gave me pause. Jack joins us now, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital. Jack, is that the right number? There's that much money in cryptocurrencies right now?
Actually, it's just under that in Bitcoin, and if you add all the other coins, I think it's closer to $3 trillion.
So I wonder if there's just a little education we ought to get here. Bitcoin is a kind of cryptocurrency. Can you just explain to us what the others are? Are they essentially the same thing as Bitcoin, but different brands, if you will?
Yes, for the most part, yes. They're all cryptocurrencies. Some of them have different capabilities. Ether, for example, allows you to attach an algorithm so you can create smart contracts that will pay based on certain conditions. Bitcoin doesn't do that, but obviously had the first mover advantage, and so it's got the popularity.
And I still wonder if Bitcoin is a currency or an investment. The dollar bill, my debit card aren't investments, they're just currency. And Bitcoin seems to act more like gold or an equity.
Actually, it's about 7 times more volatile than gold, John. I would agree with you. It was designed to be a store of value. It is acting more like speculation. but perhaps because it's still evolving, and maybe once it reaches some level of maturity, it will flatten out and behave something closer to gold.
And then I wonder what happens. I mean, does it lose its luster? Maybe the reason we love it is not because we don't know how to transact business, but because we see how it's appreciated so much.
Well, I mean, that's certainly part of the appeal. There's no question about it. I think there's several, at least on paper, purposes for cryptocurrency. One, of course, you know, as we just talked about, a store of value. But given its volatility, it's really not a great store of value. If you're looking to, you know, buy a house, let's say, in the next 6 months, you probably don't want to put your savings in crypto while you wait to make your down payment. The second, though, which is really unique and interesting, is a way to move wealth across borders. That, I think, is unique. It's not something you can do with a suitcase full of cash necessarily, not something you can do with gold. And so crypto, and especially in countries where, you know, like Hong Kong or other Haiti, other places where, you know, the environment is not stable. And I think that, households and individuals want to just put their wealth somewhere else. So I do think from that perspective, it's useful. Lastly, it's really just a speculation. You know, if you can't explain it those other two ways, then it's really a speculation.
Yeah. So do you have any advice for us? I mean, is the profit already sort of baked into Bitcoin and I should try a different crypto if I'm thinking about that?
I think there's certainly a lot to be said for that. One of the things, you know, we are looking at Crescent is a way to offer our clients opportunity to participate in the growth. And our view here is really to look more at the technology and this diversified finance ability to maybe move wealth on the web, so to speak. So we're looking at emerging companies that are moving into that space rather than just having us buy the coins outright for our clients.
Right.
You know, the fact is that these coins are up over 100% this year alone.
Okay, but I mean, if it was gold and I did mining stocks, that might mitigate some of my risk, you know, the volatility. But I don't see what the equivalent of that is on a digital product. You don't need machines or people, do you? I guess you need drives to store the information. But what would the allied industries be?
Sure. So, for example, using the architecture on which Bitcoin is built, called blockchain. Investing in companies that may be using blockchain for record storage or other kinds of transaction. It could be financial institutions that may borrow or lend cryptocurrencies, exchanges like a Coinbase. So there are ways to still ride along, I suppose, with the crypto and the popularity of a broader popularity of crypto without actually having to buy the coins themselves.
You know, and stocks go up, bonds go down. It seems like things are tied one to another. Either they go in unison or they go opposite each other. Does the cryptocurrency sector react that way to other things in the market?
Yeah, so they don't. They're pretty much a risk-on, risk-off asset class. Something that gold is really useful for is its diversification. And I think gold still holds that mantle for diversification. So it hasn't been that often this year, but we have had bouts of downdrafts in the market, and we have found that crypto has fallen along with stocks while gold has rallied. So I still believe that as a portfolio diversifier, gold is a better position than Bitcoin right now for for hedging.
One last thing. Remember when the dot-coms came on board and people were just buying dot anything because it was going to make money and everybody was going to click on, and we know how that went, but it sort of feels like that with some of these cryptos that are coming on board and they're trading at 0.000 something, and you think, what the hell? I'll just throw in with that. Maybe I'll get lucky. We're all fishing with an F. So I wonder if you agree with that analysis, and what do you make of the wisdom of just throwing some money at some of these things and seeing if they don't blow up?
I think that's it. I think there's a fair amount of that going on. There's the, you know, whether it occurred, started last year or this year, the gamification of investing, where a lot of new entrants into the market are sort of more or less playing investing on their phones. That could very well be the case. You know, I did a chart in my piece that looked at the growth of Bitcoin relative to the NASDAQ, leading up to the NASDAQ bubble. And it looks like, compared to the NASDAQ, you know, Bitcoin's going crazy, and it looks like the NASDAQ's standing still.
Yeah, but that's for sure. I'm looking at that chart right now. I'm out of time. It's nice to meet you here. Let's talk again down the road, Jack Ablin. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the invitation.
That's Jack Ablin. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital, crescentcapital.com. 12:45 on the Wintrust Business Lunch with more business news. Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deere & Company and striking United Auto Workers will return to the bargaining table today, according to Bloomberg. It'll be the first time the two sides meet since union members rejected a contract that included 10% pay raises. The 10,000 striking workers are holding out for a better deal and have been on the picket line since mid-October. At the time, Deere said it would not return to talks because the contract represented its last and best offer. The strike has caused long delays for parts and components orders. McDonald's is teaming up with Mariah Carey for its 12 Days of Deals next month. The pop star has become closely associated with the holiday season thanks to her hit All I Want for Christmas Is You. Now she and McDonald's are promoting the Mariah menu, set to start December 13th. In the U.S., customers who make a purchase through the McDonald's app on those days can get an item for free, like a sausage, biscuit, or cheeseburger. Those items will come in bags that Carrie helped design. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Veterans Day. There are thousands of Illinois farmers who are veterans, and there are a variety of programs at the federal level, also at the state level as well, to help veterans succeed at farming. The Illinois Department of Agriculture and the Illinois Farmer Veteran Coalition have a marketing program to help. It's called Homegrown by Heroes.
Homegrown by Heroes is a logo program that our veterans are able to put on their products to identify and communicate to consumers that this product was produced by a veteran.
Jackie Samburski is with the Illinois Department of Ag, and this is not aimed at big corn and soybean farmers. It's aimed at farmers like
Tony Fershey, owner, operator at Garlic Breath Farm.
Did you say Garlic Breath Farm?
Yes, Garlic Breath Farm.
Okay.
Our son thought it up. We're just in the truck trying to figure out a name for it, and he says, how about Garlic Breath Farm? And we're like, okay.
Yeah, that's nice. Back to Tony, who's one of over 12,000 ag producers in Illinois who have served in the military.
I'm a disabled veteran, United States Navy.
He and his wife Sharon raise garlic near Elburn.
Certified organic garlic. We're also looking to expand into other produce and open up a roadside farm stand by next year.
And why garlic?
We did a Google search and we had a toss-up between garlic and lavender. And my wife and I looked at each other and we said, well, we both love garlic. If we can't sell it, we can always eat it.
Man, how's it going?
The demand has been great, and our customers, we love them all.
And where do you find your customers?
Just farmers markets, typically, sometimes restaurants.
Tony Fershey says raising garlic is labor-intensive. He just finished planting about 50,000 garlic bulbs by hand.
Either kneeling or sitting in the soil and just putting bulbs in the ground.
Veteran-owned and operated Garlic Breath Farm in Elburn. You look for the Homegrown by Heroes label. Chicago Board of Trade has mellowed out a little. Wheat was in double digits higher, but now is only 7 cents higher at 8.10 a bushel. Beans are up a nickel, 12.22, and corn is down a penny at 5.68. From the farm to your belly, this is actually from the dairy farm to your belly. It is National Sunday Day. Hot fudge for me, please. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk a little bit about, we got one more segment here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth is on the line. Apple's launching legacy contacts after you die. What is this?
Yeah, so it's a way that there's something like this on Facebook, but it's essentially a way that you could allow your friends or family to access your account if something happens to you. So if you want to let people, you know, have access to your phone so that they could get in and let other people know that something has happened, that option is going to exist. Something similar happens on Facebook. You can designate somebody your, you know, in charge of your page or profile if at the time of your demise, and that person would turn the switch on turning it into a memory page. So this will be something similar where someone you trust could access your data saying, hey, you know, be sure you call my coworkers and let them know what happened to me. So here, you're the person I'm entrusting with, you know, this data. So Apple's rolling that out too.
Let's talk a little bit about Subaru. What's the latest news there?
Yeah, so Subaru is entering the electric vehicle game. They just unveiled their first electric vehicle called the Solterra. It's a result of a 2-year joint development project with Toyota, who is the biggest shareholder of Subaru. You know, and this comes around, you know, you and I have talked so much about electric vehicles in that race. You know, a lot of eyes are on Tesla, who's sort of leading that pack. We have the Rivian plant in Downstate Normal, and Rivian, of course, had their IPO this week, so a lot of conversation around them. But and of course, as Governor Pritzker is pushing for more and more electric infrastructure here in Illinois, so Subaru is also entering that game, and there's pictures of it online. It's very recognizable as a Subaru with a little bit of kind of fancier, kind of a, I don't know, Transformer stuff going on around the headlights.
There's nothing fancy about a Subaru, but it makes sense that they would get into that space. I did not realize that Toyota was an owner of Subaru.
Yeah, they're the biggest shareholder. And you know, that's funny you say that. I think a lot of people were expressing that same sentiment on social media going, I don't think I realized that they had a relationship. But indeed they do, and they have for a few years.
What's the news from Boeing this week?
Yeah, so Boeing has accepted liability for the Ethiopian Air crash. Of course, that was one of the two crashes that led to the worldwide grounding. So there's been a lot of kind of wait and see around how that would go. But this is happening in an Illinois court. So, of course, we're watching this very closely here. But in the agreement, lawyers for the victims of the family members, they won't seek punitive damages. And Boeing won't challenge the lawsuit that's being filed in Illinois. So Boeing issued a statement saying they're, you know, committed to ensuring that all families who lost loved ones in the accidents are fully compensated for their loss. But this is a really big move considering, you know, just how many eyes were on Boeing for this. You know, this was such a big part of that. 157 people died on that particular crash. Between the two, it was 346. So hopefully this is some healing and closure for the families. But again, this is happening under Illinois law, so we will be seeing this happen right here in our city.
So do you know, are the 737 fleet then up and running or flying? Are they out there completely deployed?
They're out there. Yeah, they are out there. They're not in the Chinese market. That's been like the biggest holdup market because China has not yet cleared them for flying. In fact, I recently flew on a 737 MAX. But they're, you know, they're out there, they're in circulation, and it depends on airlines. Some airlines, Southwest is the biggest customer. So if you're flying domestically on Southwest, you're very likely going to fly on one, but you know, they did go through quite a bit of clearance after, you know, after being grounded through by every country, and EU and American regulators worked really closely together to make sure that the timing was good and that that everybody felt comfortable. And the pilots really pushed back on that too, saying, we're not flying this until we're satisfied. You can be satisfied, but we want to be satisfied. We're the ones up in the air. So I think the pilots union was like had a really interesting role in that of recertifying that plane to lift the grounding.
Time for one more story. Facebook, what's the latest with Meta?
Yeah, so Facebook's parent company, Meta, has this is actually a very big move. They have announced that they are going to, starting next year, they're going to limit advertisers' ability to target users based on certain sensitive categories, mostly around identity, like sexual orientation or religion, political affiliation, race, ethnicity, even health issues. That's a very big move. If you think about the ads that you get, that's a big part of what you're targeted at. So part of this is Facebook working with the advice from civil rights experts and addressing feedback some of the issues that have emerged, because people were being targeted sometimes in a very racist or harmful, rude, kind of nasty way. So this will help negate a lot of that. I think the health piece of it is interesting. I've seen the most commentary online about that, because some people that have particular health afflictions maybe kind of are curious about, being targeted by certain advertisers.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they're going to dial that down. And I think it will be, but it's really significant. It's really one of the broadest moves they've ever made in terms of addressing targeting. So I'm curious what other platforms will do.
Right.
But Facebook's really led that charge. So it'll be interesting to see that roll out.
Amy Guth joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.